This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 18th of February 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 17th of February 2022, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. Your readers today are John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, and I will also be reading. I'm John Parker. The headlines this week are Absent Charles to be asked to keep Licorice pledge, King's Walk plans, and Council backlash over River Park. So the first headline story, Absent Charles to be asked to keep Licorice pledge. Organisers of the Licorice of Winchester appeal are confident Prince Charles will keep to his word and return to visit the statue after his late COVID-enforced withdrawal from Thursday's highly anticipated unveiling. The Prince of Wales pledged to make the trip to Winchester to see the newly unveiled sculpture in an 11th-hour speech, which was delivered to disappointed spectators by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, who was passed the honours of revealing Licorice alongside children from Park Community School in Havant. His Royal Highness looked all set to arrive in the city for the momentous occasion, but was forced to cancel just minutes before the big event after returning a positive COVID test, prompting audible groans from the crowd, but laughter at the VIP reception in the Great Hall. In a message which was relayed to disappointed spectators who had lined Jury Street, Prince Charles said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so sorry I am not able to be with you today. I'm desperately disappointed as I was looking forward to making a historic occasion with you." Reacting to the news, Steve Bryan MP said, "It's obviously frustrating that Prince Charles can't be here. I think you could hear how disappointed some people in the crowd were when they were told that he wasn't able to come. But he will come back to see it. I know he will. We're thrilled with the statue. Winchester is a city with such a story of its own, and this is a story from Winchester which I don't think many people knew. I certainly didn't. Winchester has a strong tradition of multi-faith, and we can see that today. Despite the obvious blip, the unveiling marked the culmination of over 5 years of hard work, coupled with a substantial fundraising campaign which will now support educational programmes as part of Licorice's legacy. Speaking at the reception in the Great Hall after the unveiling, Simon Sebag Montefiore, an appeal patron, said, "It is, of course, hugely frustrating Prince Charles couldn't make it today, but I wish him a speedy recovery, and I know he will be good to his word and will return to see the statue as soon as he is able to. Today it was still incredibly special. There were crowds here, members of the council, representatives of many different faiths and religions, and a lot of people from London too. It was a great day to celebrate cosmopolitan Hampshire and a special thing to see. It was interfaith and everything it should have been. The statue is finally here, and I want to say, welcome back, Licorice." Trustees of the appeal are now mulling over what to do with the statue's inaccurate plaque after questions had been raised over its future. It is engraved with the words, "To commemorate the unveiling of the statue of Licorice by His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales." Responding on behalf of the Licorice of Winchester appeal, Tony Stoller said the trustees would consult Clarence House and the council before making a decision. He said, "The Licorice of Winchester appeal trustees are considering what to do in respect of the plaque and will be consulting with Clarence House and the Hampshire County Council before coming to a final decision."
Revival planned for King's Walk. Winchester civic chiefs have approved the next stage of revamping a key part of the city centre and aim to tackle antisocial behaviour. The City Council wants to revive the King's Walk area by bringing in artists, designers and makers, and where they have controversially ousted two popular shops. It is set to appoint an architect to oversee the project. One key aim will be to tackle the antisocial behaviour by increasing footfall. The City Council has set aside £385,000 for what's called meanwhile uses before the major redevelopment of the Silver Hill area. One idea is to remove brick walls on which vagrants, beggars and drug users sit during the day, and another is to install CCTV cameras, a decision day meeting for Cabinet member Kelsey Lerney heard. Verian Lyons, head of programme, said, "We want to create activity and a buzz around the site and tackle the antisocial behaviour in that area that tenants are frequently bringing to our attention and the falling footfall as a result of antisocial behaviour. We want to design out the antisocial behaviour around the front entrance of King's Walk and make it more active, creative and vibrant. We are working with the tenants to combat antisocial behaviour. The tenants are starting to activate the space and starting to have an impact on the frequency of what we are seeing there. The council is talking to the King's Walk tenants, Business Improvement District and the police. One of those tenants, Neil Wyatt, who owns South Down Social Cafe and Emporium, says while there is an issue with antisocial behaviour, he feels the conversation has overshadowed some of the progress made by tenants. He said, "I'm a big believer in King's Walk and this part of town. There's often a lot of conversation about the area and Silver Hill, how ugly the buildings are and how much antisocial behaviour there is going on. But I love King's Walk. I think it has huge potential and there's a lot of great energy about the place and amazing businesses. The public conversation is maybe a little bit behind where the businesses are with the area. We want to re-energise it, and we're thinking proactively about how we can do that. There's a real need for a creative space in Winchester. It's a very creative place with lots of designers, people in the media, innovators, makers and artists too. Rent is a big issue for these types of businesses and creators, so if we can place those people in somewhere where the rent is a little bit more affordable, like King's Walk, then I think the people of Winchester will benefit massively. Historically, the area in front of my shop, even back to the days when there was a fountain out the front, was a place certain groups would meet. Drinkers and other antisocial behaviour would and has taken place, but we've been working closely with the police and council, and we've done some really positive work to improve that. There is, of course, a lot of external and cultural issues behind it, but you have to remember the unit was previously dead space, so it's natural people would colonise that space. But since we've moved here, there's been a real improvement, and hopefully that will continue. The decision day by Cabinet member Kelsey Lerney, portfolio holder for housing and asset management, heard that South Down Social Cafe and Emporium, the new occupant of one of the most prominent King's Walk premises, had plans to raise its profile. Ms. Lyons said she would meet architects this week to tour the area and discuss various options. The King's Walk tenants have been waiting a long time and say, let's get on with it and get it done. The two ousted shops, Suki Market and Sunflowers Emporium, are due to leave their premises this month. Ms. Lyons said one idea for King's Walk may be too ambitious. There was an idea to make fresh use of the rooftop car park, but with the partial demolition of the former multi-storey, there are access issues off Middlebrook Street, she told the Decision Day meeting. It's trickier than we first thought, but we haven't ruled it out. Councillor Kelsey Lerney said, it is essential we employ an architect with vision to create what we want to see.
Council backlash over River Park. A city councillor has warned that his party risks losing control of Winchester City Council over the controversy about the future of the River Park Leisure Centre. Councillor Charles Radcliffe, a Liberal Democrat, has said public anger over plans to transfer the land to Southampton University could rebound in the elections in May. The council has agreed to transfer the site to the university on a long lease, sparking fears that public facilities will be lost to a private body. But the decision has prompted a legal challenge from the newly formed Friends of River Park and a campaign to save the skate park that would be included in the transfer. Councillor Radcliffe said the deal with the university would be good for Winchester, but added, how can something so good end up looking so bad? Last year, the City Council seized the opportunity of a deal with the University of Southampton, which is ready to invest £100 million in redeveloping the site of the disused leisure centre in River Park. But it failed to anticipate a potential court challenge and a storm of public anger that could yet put at risk both the deal itself and, with elections looming, the Liberal Democrats' hold on the council. He said the council needs to run, quote, an open, competitive bidding process and let the public have their say. The trouble is, in their haste to lock in Southampton University, the City Council forgot to ask the community what it wanted to see on the site. I think it's unlikely any other bidder could match what the university is offering, but we'll never know if the council denies everyone else a chance to put up alternative ideas forward. It was a point that I and several other Lib Dem councillors, including all three local ward councillors, made back in November, when Cabinet first decided to go with the university. They didn't listen then, but it's not too late to listen now. In the blog, Councillor Radcliffe addresses the issue of the skate park. To make matters worse, the council is including the existing skate park in the land it's offering Southampton University, albeit on condition the university maintains it. People are asking, quite reasonably, what Southampton wants with a public skate park. Presumably the answer is, in case it decides it needs the space for redevelopment in future. If it does, then under proposed terms of agreement, it could apparently build over the existing skate park as long as it provides an alternative facility somewhere else. Fears for the skate park's future have ignited a popular grassroots campaign that's exploded on the ground, online, and on the front page of the Chronicle. Save our skate park! Councillor Radcliffe said there was misinformation afoot, including the falsehood that Southampton University wants to build on the parkland at River Park.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Chalk, Lillian Doris Chalk, on the 5th of February, aged 90. Clarkson, Robert Christopher Clarkson, who was the Reverend Bob Clarkson of South Wanston, at home on the 7th of February, aged 89. Davies, Brian Davies, in Winchester Hospital on the 6th of February, aged 85. Faithful, Sandra Elizabeth Faithful, on the 5th of February, aged 75. Graham, Wendy Jean Graham, on the 13th of February. McGill, Joan Pamela McGill, nay May, on the 3rd of February. Parsons, Ian Parsons, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, on the 25th of January, aged 88. Pierce, Rosalind Maureen Pierce, née Dumper, at home on the 18th of December, aged 70. Roberts, Belly Pascal Roberts, née Patabu, known as Feli, in Winchester Hospital on the 31st of January, aged 72. Thompson, Renee Juliet Thompson, née Corbran, in Brown Candover on the 25th of January, aged 94. Towns, Michael Towns, known as Mike, at home on the 5th of February, aged 67. Trelevan, Iris Patricia Trelevan, at home in Wellington, aged 86. Now we have Christian comment,
which is written by Liz Tatham, and she has headlined it Nature's Beauty. The Winter Olympics are now with us, so soon, of course, after the delayed summer event. I'm fixated on the snow, ice, beautiful views and landscapes, as well as the skill and endurance on display. Nature's Bounty, one of the commentators called the powdery snow falling on the slopes, all very beautiful and wonderful to see. Switch to the Ukraine, where we see mile on mile of waste and scrubland covered in snow. It looks uninviting, and under the circumstances undoubtedly frightening. The perfect environment for invading tanks. Nature can be our friend or our enemy. For the people living there, it undoubtedly loses its beauty, knowing what lies behind. In our Old Testament reading at my church yesterday, Jeremiah uses nature and its contrasts to describe our chosen behaviours. Cursed is the one who trusts in human beings. He is like a barren bush in the desert that enjoys no change of season. And again, blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord. He is like a tree planted beside the waters that stretches out its roots to the stream. Jeremiah says that when we spread our roots into the living stream that is God, when we trust in him and live deeply in him, we will not fear drought, we will thrive and bear fruit. How do we do that? Well, firstly we turn our face and our firm intentions to him. We then turn our tanks of aggression, resentment, envy or unforgiveness away from the homes of those we fear, dislike or envy, and instead embrace peace and kindness. We have the Bible, the Word of God, full of hidden treasures and encouragements, such as the passage from Jeremiah. We can pray, start a conversation with God on the go, in silence, whatever feels right for each of us. He will be delighted. These good intentions and actions lead us to being kind and thoughtful, caring for others and offering support and love. Our relationship with the God who we know through Jesus will fill us with the strength, wisdom and energy to do good things and be good people. I came across a love poem the other day. Two verses have resonance with the Jeremiah passage. Like a desert lacks the waters, like a cut flower lacks the earth, like a heart with a hole lacks. And in the last verse, make me whole again, turn me into an ocean, let summer return. So in us there is a deep hole waiting to be filled, not just by the love of another person, but an engaging love with a supernatural God, an ocean of love and goodness. Turn your deserts into river-flooded landscapes and plant your roots deeply in the water. Let us also pray that the snowy wastes in the east will return to peace and beauty as intended by their Creator.
Next, we have letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. So we've got quite a lot of letters this week, 16 in total, and we'll start off with those.
And this from Leslie Bartlett of St James Terrace, entitled Jewish History. Sir, Chris Gordon's letter in last week's Chronicle recognising Suzanne Bartlett's work is much appreciated by her friends and family. The Bartlett dwelling, then and now, is on the edge of the Jewish cemetery operational in 13th century Winchester. Excavations of the site in the early 90s fascinated Sue, a Jew herself. Keen to find out more about the Jews of Winchester, she asked me to join her in looking up historical records available in the local resources centre in what is now the Ark. There we came across a brief, uninformative reference to a 13th century Jewess called Licoricea. Captivated by the name, Sue's decade-long project had begun. So, remarkably, Licoricea's emergence occurred within a few metres of where her statue now stands. Sue, with no background in history, sought the help of Southampton University Medieval History Department. Trish Skinner, a senior academic there, became her mentor and guide. The research into Licoricea's life was spread over 10 years and was complicated by the cancer that intermittently stressed Sue's last 22 years. The research, in book form, was completed before her death in 2008. It was Trish that facilitated the book's publication. Sue's political career was distinguished, taking her from the Young Communists to the First Labour, First Woman Chairmanship of Hampshire County Council, Education and the Arts were particular concerns for her. She was for a time Vice Chairman of the Sculpture Trust. The story of Hampshire through the ages was close to her heart, and she enjoyed working with Barry Cunliffe on the Danebury Trust. This love of Hampshire brought her strangely close to her political adversary, the late Freddie Emery Wallace. Prior to the 100 years of county council celebrations in 1989, there were discussions as to how this might be recognised locally. Sue, at that time vice chairman of the council, thought the historical concept of the Hampshire hog might fit in here. She put the idea to Emery Wallace, who embraced it immediately, and now we have the child-friendly statuary outside the council's headquarters. Sue would be happy with the new statue in its recognition of Licoricea's brave and creative stance in the face of gross intolerance. From Leslie Bartlett, St James Terrace.
The next letter is entitled Amazing Life, and it's from Danny Habel. Sir, Christopher Gordon is correct in his letter, when Chronicle 10th of February, when he says that the statue to Licoricea that was unveiled last week probably would have not happened were it not for the groundbreaking research done by Sue Bartlett into the medieval Jewish history of Winchester. We must all acknowledge the immense credit due to her for revealing the story of Licoricea's amazing life. It is through Sue that we have the opportunity to learn of Licoricea's ability and strength of character that makes her such a powerful role model for women today. Sarah Herity, teaching and learning advisor for Hampshire, has utilised Licoricea's story to create a captivating programme for children's education in the county. Licoricea's narrative looks from an unconventional angle at the significant Jewish community of Winchester prior to the expulsion of all Jews from England in 1290. It illustrates to us how a minority culture can benefit the wider community socially, creatively and financially. We can also see the value of education, as she was able to represent herself in the presence of King Henry III and in the law courts. So a big thank you to Sue Bartlett, who I only got to know when she was already very ill. Even then, I found her to be a warm, capable and determined person. She began the process that has led to the statue of an important female character from our past being unveiled in the city. The sculpture is a wonderful reminder of her and her 10 years of detailed analysis. May the restored identity of Licorice bring communities closer and make Love Thy Neighbour a statement that applies to us as individuals and to Winchester. And that letter was from Danny Hable, Beer Close, Week, Winchester.
This letter from Peter Rees is about anti-Semitism. Sir, on the day the beautiful statue of the Jewish citizen Licorice and her son was unveiled, there was a remarkable and ironic coincidence. The organisation that protects and monitors attacks on Jewish people in the UK, the Community Safety Trust, reported that 2021 had been a dreadful year for anti-Semitic attacks on Jewish people and children. There were 2,555 anti-Jewish hate incidents, a 34% increase on 2020. Some 826 of these were anti-Zionist, related to Israel and the Middle East. Licorice was a highly influential businesswoman. She was probably murdered in what would now be classified as an anti-Semitic hate crime, possibly related to a substantial debt she was owed. Having lived and worked in the thriving and flourishing Winchester Jewish community, she and her Christian servant, Alice, were deliberately targeted and killed. Although some men were indicted for her murder, none were convicted and the crime was never solved. One of the aims of the trust that established this sculpture in her memory is to promote tolerance and diversity in today's society. This is a perpetual and significant objective for everyone who believes in a civilized society where differences are addressed and hopefully resolved peacefully. Anti-Semitism is still very much prevalent in the UK, cultivated by extreme views, opinions and activities by the hard left and right. It is important that her image and memory act as a reminder to us all. Anti-Semitism, no matter how subtle or direct, perhaps seemingly insignificant, as well as acts of deliberate harm to other beliefs, religions and races, are a crime against humanity. We should not be afraid to condemn these, continuing to call out such hate-fueled persecution wherever and whenever it happens. Let us enjoy the majesty and beauty of Licorice's statue, remembering her Jewish legacy and deliberately fateful end. That is Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And continuing on that theme, this letter is from Simon Lever. Sir, as an observer at the unveiling of the statue of Licorice in Jewry Street, it was disappointing that Prince Charles could not be there. However, there was a delightful feeling of empathy, as a number of those attending the ceremony, including the chief rabbi, who delivered a heartwarming speech addressing the importance of interfaith harmony. Dean Catherine Ogle and Callan Rowley happily engaged with everyone at the unveiling. Harmony is essential for peace and kindness. Such a ceremony demonstrates what can be achieved. From Simon Lever, Juniper Close.
Right, a change of topic now. And this letter is from David Briggs and is entitled Misguided Route. Sir, I've been studying the Winchester Movement strategy, and whilst I know that this is largely limited to the city centre, I am at a loss to understand how the rerouting of the Andover Road traffic through the new King's Barton estate is consistent with any of the three priorities identified by Winchester City and Hampshire County Councils. These priorities, which should be no less relevant to King's Barton, are to reduce traffic, and yet quite the opposite will be achieved. Support healthier lifestyles, and yet air quality, peace and safety will only be diminished. And to support sustainable growth, although vehicular traffic unrelated to the estate will contribute nothing. Since these councils, some 15 or so years ago, ingeniously accepted the rerouting idea as meeting their design requirements to integrate the estate with the city, I have not spoken to nor have I heard of a single individual who thinks that this is anything but the most misguided of ideas. Surely there are people with responsible oversight of the development who hold the same view privately. Is it so very difficult for them to petition the Secretary of State to alter his mandate or to renegotiate contracts with the builders? Oh, and the DFT, that's Department for Transport, annual average daily flow statistics in 2019 for all vehicles leaving and entering Andover Road, that's the B3420, at Three Maids Hill, total over 20,000, or say around 20 a minute over a 16-hour working day. I suggest everyone stands by a road and counts the traffic for a minute to understand what an increase of this magnitude means. And that letter was from David Briggs of Harestock Road, Harestock, Winchester.
In this letter, Roger Stevens let us know his view on Winchester City Council, and it's entitled Council Miasma. Sir, as noted in the Chronicle of February the 10th, people are campaigning to reverse the decision to close Andover Road. The intention to bring heavy traffic through King's Barton housing estate in order to enhance cycling and walking opportunities on the Andover Road seemed inexplicable, given that there is plenty of room beside that road for dedicated walking and cycling facilities. It was and is, however, typical of the decisions made by Winchester City Council. The recent proposal that buses should be allowed onto the Andover Road, presumably to slalom around the cyclists and pedestrians there, smacks of an idea that struck the councillors on their annual day out to the seaside, several stops beyond Barking on the train to Southend. Are the council offices and the Guildhall and haunted with a miasma that befuddles our councillors and causes everything to get screwed up? Or is it in the water? There seems to be something about Winchester City Council. It doesn't matter who is in charge, nothing gets done properly, if indeed it gets done at all. That letter is by Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And continuing, this one is from Dave Anderson, or I beg your pardon, Dave Alderson, and is entitled Roman Roads. Sir, yet again we see some lopsided thinking about what to do with Andover Road. The present suggestion seems to be to keep it open as a priority road for route for buses, while the remaining traffic to and from all routes north of the city are funneled through the new housing estate, which is King's Barton. The Romans knew a thing or two about roads, and the basis of Andover Road was constructed nearly two millennia ago. It is still the main route into the city for traffic from the M4, A34 and A303, and as such it should remain open. One might suppose that bus routes should operate through the focal points of population, like King's Barton, rather than pass them, while through traffic is taken off the well-established route to meander through the estate. Oh dear. From Dave Olson, Cherry Close, South Wanston.
Staying with the traffic theme, the next letter is from Jane Harding, entitled Lights Needed. Sir, concerning the suggested 20 mile per hour speed limit in Stanmore Lane, Chronicle 3rd of February, I've often wondered why the railway bridge at the bottom of the lane next to Stanmore School does not have the same traffic light system as the bridge between Ranley and Airlie Road nearby. These lights are extremely efficient picking up approaching cars and even bicycles, so that one is rarely delayed, but it does allow people on foot a safe passage. Stanmore Bridge is even more in need, with families and dog walkers attempting to negotiate the extremely narrow passageway to get to schools and playgrounds. It is often feels lethal, especially with small children or dogs at one side. And that letter was from Jane Harding, Backstreet, Winchester.
The next letter is from Stephen Cann, who is the Save Our State Skate Park petition organiser. And not surprisingly, the letter is headed Skate Petition. Sir, on Friday, February the 4th, we submitted the Save Our Skate Park objection to the proposed disposal of the land undersigned by an incredible 2,265 names. A huge thank you to all those who signed and to the Chronicle for covering the story. We have received a response from the leader of the council and are disappointed that it appears to indicate their intent to continue. They are happy with simple commitments in briefing statements from Southampton University rather than robust legal safeguards that could remove the skate park from the sale or prevent moving it. I am surprised Lucille Thompson responded with, quote, "The fact is that the council does not have the money to develop the site," unquote. WCC's annual accounts show the Community Infrastructure Levy Reserve Fund, collected from developers, has grown year on year from £532,000 in 2016 to £10.9 million in 2021. A recent Cabinet report for the Central Winchester Regeneration stated the CIL balance now at £13.4 million, £7 million being unallocated, where they want to use a net £2.5 million for the CWR. It appears at a minimum somewhat unwise and disingenuous for Councillor Thompson to state as fact there is no money. It seems there simply isn't the will in the council cabinet to consider how else to develop the site for residents. The response ended, quote, "I hope I have dispelled some of the myths," unquote. Unfortunately, the myth appears to be that Winchester cannot fund its own community facilities. That letter is from Stephen Cann, Save Our Skate Park petition organiser, Northanger Drive, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
And this one is from Edna Bowden, who is a member of the Winchester Ice Sports Association. And it's entitled Kids, the Future. Sir, I totally agree with Stephen Cann in his Let's Save Our Skate Park Chronicle, January 27th. Winchester does not have very good provision for young people. It is a thriving city with a fast-growing student and younger population, but the council do not appear to be making any provision to their plans for kids of the future. The community of Winchester would benefit considerably from a permanent ice rink, a bowling alley, and another cinema. But if none of these are on the council agenda, then they just won't happen. Private leisure developers wishing to invest in the city have no chance if additional leisure facilities, for example an ice rink, are not something the council wish to pursue. But what if the people of Winchester would like these additional leisure facilities? Surely we should have our say. From Edna Bowden, Greenhill Road.
Mary Pearson writes about View from a Hill. Sir, it would be a great shame if well-intentioned proposals for a major scheme to rejuvenate St Giles's Hill, Chronicle 3rd of February, unintentionally destroyed its unique character. Reference to limited selective tree removal is reassuring. However, there is no guarantee with regard to shrubs and other greenery on the slopes. As such, areas can appear insignificant and much smaller than before clearance, horticultural experience is needed here. Also, I hope that in the enthusiasm for opening up the view, we do not lose those things which most urban parks lack and that make St Giles's Hill so special. Approaching the hill through the gateway on Magdalen Hill is to immediately lose traffic noise and to be in a cool and tranquil place. The canopy of mature trees gives protection from the sun, ivy provides all-round-year ground cover, and there are wildflowers in seasons. While continuing to the summit, there are evocative glimpses of the city on the way, much more interesting than seeing the whole vista all at once. There is birdsong and other wildlife to enjoy. These things provide a sense of well-being and should be valued too for their practical benefits at a time of global warming. Once gone, they cannot be replicated by new planting, and future generations will not be able to enjoy them as we do. We are very lucky to have in our city something that other local authorities lack, and that Councillor Radcliffe describes as a jewel in Winchester's crown. Rundown old public houses are often renovated using old materials, but they rarely achieve the authenticity of the original. I hope that Winchester's jewel will remain a precious one when work on it has finished. And that's from Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winnall, Winchester.
Inertia or what is a question posed in this letter from Edward Fennell. Sir, in the past fortnight in your pages, Councillor Charles Radcliffe has highlighted the neglect of St Giles Hill, whilst James Freeman has pointed out the need for King Alfred's statue to have a spruce up. Just as important, I would suggest, is the refurbishment of Hyde Gate, a Grade 1 listed building on a site of national historic significance as the burial place of King Alfred the Great. Regular campaigning by the Friends of Hyde Gate produces rhetoric from our local St Bart's Ward city councillors, but little real action to remedy its current squalid condition. However, this is just a small part of a much wider story of the more general mismanagement by the City Council of this historic site, leading last summer to the collapse of a wall within the precincts of the Abbey. Meanwhile, a long-running attempt to clear pigeons from the gateway appears to have gone nowhere. As of this past weekend, the pigeons are back in force. Inertia or ineptitude? Take your pick. That's from Edward Fennell, Egbert Road, Hyde.
And this letter is from Andrew Rutter. Andrew is a retired City Council Conservation Officer, and it's entitled Need for Action at City Bridge. Sir, Ian Tate has reminded the City and County Councils in the letters of Chronicle February the 3rd of the inadequate provision for the increasing number of pedestrians wanting to cross the bridge from the Chesil multi-storey car park, including the elderly and families. This is a danger that is gradually increasing as car manufacturers increase the size of vehicles and with their protruding wing mirrors. I hope if his solution is implemented, an elegant metal bridge hard against the existing stonework, it is recognised as only a short-term solution and that the bridge is designed so that it can be relocated to another crossing point at the river when pedestrian provision on City Bridge can be fully implemented. From a long-term conservation point of view, I don't favour this solution, because coming up the weirs, the silhouette of City Mill above the attractive stone bridge is one of the views that gives the city its special character, and this would devalue its photographic attraction. Not so long ago, a proposed development behind Eastgate Street and close to the river would have destroyed the mill's silhouette. Sadly, two sycamore trees that complemented it have gone because no owner would choose to have them in their back garden. I believe that if the centre of the conservation area is ever to be enhanced for people by reducing through traffic, the city bridge should be redesigned as a pinch point. It should have a single line of traffic controlled by lights, enabling pavements to be widened, and traffic crossing the bridge would be restricted to buses, taxis, and disabled drivers. The implication of this is the increased traffic from the M3 and A34, and this should be catered for by increased park and ride provision, with western and northern bypasses as part of the County Council's Winchester Movement strategy. If the city does not protect its historic attributes that gives Winchester its character, then many visitors will progressively reduce. From Andrew Rutter, St John's Road.
Bob Barnes writes about wealth and power. Sir, reading the Chronicle's letters and articles, the one point not questioned is, why did our city council have to go cap in hand to Winchester's University to get part funding for the Bar End Leisure Centre, as I recall they did? And why did they have to go cap in hand to Southampton University to obtain funding for River Park, however controversial? Clearly, there is something wrong here. If our Winchester Council's financial management is reasonably sound, then Her Majesty's Government has got its priorities wrong in enabling universities to splash out and subsidise local authorities. Winchester University's developments in the past decade must have totaled £1 billion or more. The ability of both universities seemingly able to draw on a bottomless pit of money for the development of peripheral activities, public, sport, leisure and arts facilities, which in the latter project are right outside their geographical area and inside that of the former, is highly questionable. How do they account for the return on investment? If Winchester's MP wants something useful to do, he could well look into this whole business of universities' ability to fund or part fund local authority projects for public use, where local authorities can't. Southampton are known to have made a lot of money selling land for development. Should there not be a windfall or capital gains tax on such activities? And that letter was from Bob Barnes, Wadden Lane, Oslebury.
This letter from Tommy Geddes is entitled River Park Future. Sir, I was surprised and concerned to hear about the City Council's plan to hand over the River Park Leisure Centre site to the University of Southampton. Surprised that such a step should be taken without any consultation with other interested parties, such as the University of Winchester, or with the public, and concerned over whether Southampton University is a safe pair of hands in which to vest a valued community asset. The council would be wise to look into the closure of the internationally renowned Textile Conservation Centre, which used to be at Winchester School of Art before it fell into Southampton's hands. And should we not worry about their professed commitment to Winchester's arts and culture, given the closure of the Nuffield Theatre in their own city? The council would also be wise to look into how Southampton was handed over the campus of the failing La Sainte Union College for gratis some years ago, on the understanding they would run it as a kind of community college, concentrating on adult and continuing education. It is now a housing estate. I should declare an interest as a former employee of the University of Winchester, which would surely be threatened by the incursion of Southampton into the city. I do not, of course, speak for the university. What on earth does the council think it is doing, offering a sweetheart deal to another city's university to the detriment of its own? So asks and writes Tommy Geddes, Cannon Street, Winchester.
And this letter from Bill Hode is on the subject, the same subject of River Park and others. Sir, the front page news of the Chronicle on January the 13th was very enlightening as to the way Winchester City Council continue to try to do their best to help and support the residents of Winchester. Having acknowledged the unlawfulness of its decision to hand over the city's former leisure centre site without giving residents a chance to have their say on plans, a city council spokesperson informed us that, quote, the number of legal cases raised with the council over the past 3 years shows that we have successfully defended more than double the cases we have conceded. Applying simple mathematics to this revelation shows that one third of the council's proposals, which have been challenged over the past 3 years, have been illegally conceived. At the tail end of last year, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, a prime mover in this latest proposed fiasco, was asked in a television interview why consultations had been behind closed doors. She simply smiled and replied glibly, "We did not want to raise expectations." What she should perhaps have replied was that the council did not want to raise objections from the disgruntled residents to an obviously, albeit illegal, flawed scheme. On November the 2nd, 2021, the Chronicle reported that later in the same month, councillors would consider awarding a 5-year lease on the River Park site to the University of Southampton, and that, if successful, a long-term 150-year lease would then be awarded. The arrogance of granting 150-year leases to organisations that are not part of the community is beyond belief. It quite beggars belief that, in all this, the council have still been observed to be moving stealthily forward with their attempts to raise money from yet another of their dubious proposals. When will they realise that they are not put in this position to raise money like a badly run small family business, and remember that their function is to be the custodian of a fine city? Without the areas that the cathedral and the college preserve, where would the city be? We should all thank the staff of the Chronicle for their diligent reporting, which brings these matters to our attention, something which the council seems to find difficult. From Bill Hode, Worthy Lane.
Well, that concludes the letters. We had quite a crop this week. Obviously, the good citizens of Winchester are really exercised about what's going on in the city, which is great.
Yeah.
We now continue with the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle, and that will be followed by a letter from Westminster from Steve Bryan, and then a first-person comment. So, Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. An absence filled after more than 700 years. Disappointing though it was that Prince Charles was unable to attend the unveiling of the statue of Licorice of Winchester on Jury Street, it was a great day for the city. Many thoughtful people will have wondered over the years about the name Jury Street and why there were no physical remains of the community that gave the street its name. That absence was symbolic in its own right, as the Winchester community was destroyed when Jews, having expended their usefulness to King Edward I, were expelled in 1290. The new statue is righting that wrong and reminds us that here in the UK we too have succumbed to the evil of anti-Semitism. Licorice herself was murdered in 1277 at her home in Jury Street, just down the road from her statue. Few people know that in the Middle Ages, Jewish people in this country had by law to wear a badge, possibly a yellow star, identifying them as Jewish, a chilling precursor of Nazi Germany in the 1930s and 1940s. Licorice reminds us that history is not made by white men, and so her statue will forever be a breath of fresh air.
Letter from Winchester from Steve Bryan, MP. This month I am returning to a familiar subject, one which my constituents know I am passionate about. In recent weeks I have spoken in Parliament about the new 10-year cancer plan. As a former minister in this area, I know huge strides have been made in cancer care in recent years, Indeed, in the last 15, one-year survival has increased by more than 10%, and for patients diagnosed in 2015, their survival rate was 72% after 1 year. The new blueprint builds on the NHS long-term plan, which I published in January 2019. It set an ambition that by 2028, the proportion of cancers diagnosed at stages 1 and 2 will rise from around half now to three-quarters of cancer patients. We know early diagnosis is cancer's magic key, so this is a must. Our new vision, which is set out for you to comment on now, outlines how we will lead the world in cancer care. We will be taking a long-term look at how we harness innovation and what we want the patient experience to look like over the next decade. We will draw on the latest technologies and the smartest possible use of data. The NHS Gallery trial has given us a glimpse into how technology can transform the way cancer is detected. As part of this plan, we will pursue every possible opportunity to partner with this country's tech pioneers, who had such a decisive impact during the pandemic. This obviously includes improving the number of people who are diagnosed at an early stage, boosting the cancer workforce, without which this cannot happen. Intensifying research on mRNA vaccines for cancer and delivering more personalised care both before and, crucially, after treatment. If we get this right, not only will we save lives, but we reduce the impact cancer has on the NHS by tackling it earlier. Cancer has not, of course, gone away over the past two COVID years. The pandemic has impacted upon many cancer patients and their families, who will naturally have been concerned about potential changes in their treatment plans, visiting their GP or hospital during the pandemic, or about their increased vulnerability to the virus. While many cancer patients will recognise these concerns, the data shows that NHS staff has risen magnificently to the challenge of maintaining cancer services. Overall cancer treatment has been maintained, with 95% of people starting treatment, once they're diagnosed, of course, within a month. I pay great tribute to the staff at Hampshire Hospitals who played their part in doing just that for my constituents, making the most of the groundbreaking deal we did with Sarum Road to keep oncology services off-site. One pandemic fallout I'm very concerned about is screening, for breast cancer especially. That is why I am working with Breast Cancer Now and will next month introduce a new bill in Parliament focusing on the early diagnosis of breast cancer after news that half of women in England with potential symptoms were not seen by a specialist within 2 weeks of referral in December. Cancer is a battle I have personally lost more than I have won, so I'm going to work really hard to make this strategy a success and support our NHS.
We were going to read you first person, but I'm afraid we're recording this in the middle of Storm Eunice, and we just had a power cut, and I'm afraid we've lost it. So I'm afraid we're going to have to skip the first person, and we will just continue with the rest of the news. Just to say that there are no special announcements this week. Sunrise this morning was at 7:15. Sunset today, that's Friday, will be at about 5:30. And again, if you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problem with the recordings you have received from us, please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. So apologies that we've had to miss out that track, but I hope you have all been kept safe during the storms. We can hear the wind whistling round where we were recording. There are certain things have sort of come adrift. We can see outside. There was a canopy outside which appears to come down, but I hope you managed to all keep safe. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Pancake race to return in person. This year's Shrove Tuesday pancake race, organised by Winchester Rotary in partnership with Winchester Cathedral, is returning at the beginning of March. The event will take place in person this year on March the 1st from 12:30pm to 2pm. Last year, the event moved online due to COVID restrictions, with competitors posting online videos. Up to 40 teams will race in Winchester Cathedral's outer close, representing businesses, charities, churches and other organisations from the local community. Trophies will be awarded to the team which completes the distance in the fastest time and the team in the best fancy dress. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, and the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Vivian Achwal, will open the event.
Services for review at post-COVID City Council. The COVID crisis for Winchester City Council has been less serious than feared, but it has still taken a massive hit. Civic chiefs say income in the 2021-22 financial years is 14% down, below the 20% that it had planned for. The council is set to approve its budget for 2022-23 financial year and has also received a 1.3 million boost from a delay in government funding cuts. But council leaders say the long-term impact of the pandemic will still force it to review its services. Councillor Neil Cutler, Deputy Council Leader, said, "We had to make £3 million in cuts and 24 redundancies. The recovery has been better than expected, but we are still 14% down. The recovery has seen a rise in parking, a high number of visitors and a return to shoppers to the High Street," he said. The council is poised next week to approve a rise in its council tax of 2.7%, which is well below the inflation rate of 5.4%. Charges for the new leisure centre and at Meadowside are being capped at 3% to stimulate demand. The £1.3 million boost will be spent on as follows: £450,000 on historic monuments, including King Alfred's statue, Hyde Gate, the Buttercross and St Morris's Tower. £185,000 on Moore Street cleansing, replacement street furniture and action on fly tipping. £100,000 for the Council Hardship Fund to help struggling households. £250,000 to trial low carbon bin lorries and or buses. £150,000 on preparation for a food waste trial in 2023, and £40,000 on bike storage. Councillor Cutler said, "I am really pleased to bring forward a positive budget with clear plans to spend on essential services and to support much needed work to address the climate emergency and improve neighbourhoods across the district. Whilst we cannot avoid some increase to council tax and other charges, we have been able to keep increases well below inflation and have also included a number of measures to help those most in need." He warned, though, "We face a difficult 2 to 3 years with incomes down £2 million a year, and we are looking at service efficiencies and ways of generating income."
Popular city centre cafe expands into next door. A trendy Winchester cafe has announced its expansion, which will create 5 jobs. Known for its cocktails, coffee and atmosphere, Cabinet Rooms in Drury Street is expanding premises into the property next door, formerly Computer Solutions. Owner Gary Whiter said, "A lot of thought has gone into this. We just get so full as we're really a tiny space and we end up turning people away, which we don't want to do. So it felt like a natural move to increase the size. The vision is that it's going to be a small room, but we'll still have that cozy feel with a cabinet vibe. We're known for our warm welcomes. In the evening, it's candlelight with jazz music playing. We'll keep that vibe. We're not expecting to employ people that know everything about cocktails, so it's a really good opportunity for people that have an interest in gin, spirits, and maybe they like making cocktails at home. So it's a really good opportunity to get stuck in and learn some more skills. The Cabinet Rooms has been crowned top-rated cafe bar in Winchester by TripAdvisor. Gary, 44, from Winchester, said he was pleased that an independent has scored so highly. I'm very proud of what we have achieved and grateful that people recognise that what we're trying to do here is, which is to be a genuine place welcoming the community. We opened in 2017 because there was nowhere we could go for a nice coffee in the evenings after work apart from the high street chains. We wanted to create somewhere people could relax and enjoy good service and quality products without a massive price tag.
Major hurdle cleared for new GP surgery. A multi-million new doctor's surgery in Winchester has passed a vital hurdle. The new St Clement's surgery on the corner of Friars Gate and Upper Brook Street has received the green light from the NHS. The scheme, which will create a purpose-built facility on the current short-stay car park, has now received all official approvals from both NHS England and Improvement and NHS Hampshire, Southampton and Isle of Wight Clinical Commissioning Group. It will replace the 1960s building on nearby Tanner Street, which is deteriorating in condition. The project is now free to tender the construction contract, ready to begin later this year. Planning permission from the City Council has already been secured, and minor amendments to the design have also been approved to ensure the layout is future-proofed and can accommodate the latest advancements in clinical care, with space for minor surgery and treatment, collaboration with other services and organisations, training areas, and a digital health hub. GP partner at St Clement's, Dr. Susie Burns, said, "It's incredibly exciting to have reached this stage and to know that construction will actually begin in a matter of months. This is such a fundamental part of our plans to continue improving care for our patients and to deliver the service we want to for people in Winchester." Clinical Director at North and Mid Hampshire CCG, Dr. Charlotte Hutchings, said, "This build is a priority for primary care in the city and is fantastic to see it moving forward. The scheme is being funded and developed by National Primary Care Premises Specialist Assura PLC, which is involved in 600 primary care buildings nationwide. The impact of the building's design to enable new digital ways of working will be part of an in-depth multi-year study led by Wessex Academic Health Science Network, which is also due to begin work soon. Winchester City Council remains a key supporter of the project, having agreed a 1,500-year-long leasehold on the site with Assura."
New use proposed for old ticket office. The disused Victorian ticket office at Shawford Railway Station is set to undergo a major makeover as part of a trio of ongoing regeneration projects at Hampshire stations. The building, which includes 5 rooms, a kitchen and a toilet, is set to be transformed into a multifunctional community space with cafe facilities. Having raised £250,000 to fund the sympathetic conversion and refurbishment, The Three Rivers Community Rail Partnership, partnered by architectural design firm EP Projects, is looking to begin work on the vacant building this month, with a view to unveiling the cafe and related space as early as the summer. The Chronicle understands that once it is finished, the community space will also be available to the public to hire, for local events and functions. A spokesperson for EP Projects said, EP Projects is proud to announce the involvement in the refurbishment of the Shawford Station Victorian ticket office and waiting room to create a community space with kitchen and ancillary facilities. The proposed scheme also includes minor re-landscaping of the north and west of the building to provide new external social space. This development comes after a push from South Western Railway, which is leasing the building to the Three Rivers Community Rail Partnership for nominal rent, to make a host of redundant spaces available for community use. The Shawford Station building is just one of a host of redundant spaces in Hampshire made available by SWR for community use, following a previous internal review of all buildings across its network. At Swathling Station, an SWR building has been turned into a free shop, collecting food which would otherwise be thrown away, and redistributing it to people who can make use of it. At Netley Station, an additional toilet has been made available to a local community group, while plans were drawn up last year to reopen an old waiting room there. Elsewhere, both CRP and EP projects are continuing work on a further two projects at disused heritage sites. At Woolston Station, proposals have been put forward to transform the historic listed signal box into a community and social meeting space for local groups and businesses. EP Projects proposals also include on-site renewables and battery storage to provide net zero carbon credentials. A further larger project is also being eyed up at Romsey Station, with fundraising efforts now being ramped up to regenerate the derelict station master's house.
Festival license is renewed by council. A Winchester food festival can be held after complaints were made about noise levels last year. Foodies Festival took place at North Walls Recreation Ground over the weekend of July the 17th last year. Concerns were raised by local residents about the noise levels the event produced, with 8 letters of objection sent to Winchester City Council. The licensing subcommittee agreed a review of the license to include conditions of noise control and management. Improved lines of communication with local residents were also required. Sue Hitchin, Managing Director of Foodies, explained that the event is one of many that take place across the country and the focus is on food and local producers, not music. Ms. Hitchin said, on the music stage, they play acoustic during the day and louder during the evening, but only up to 8 p.m. We did inform local residents about the event, as we did door drops in Nuns Road, Berinus Road, Monks Road and King Alfred Place. We didn't receive any complaints during the festival, as my mobile number was on the door drop. In future, we will have a hotline to ensure the event can always be contacted. This was one of the first post-lockdown events and we felt that the noise level was okay. It's a family-friendly event and the feedback received was positive. After the members had deliberated, Committee Chair, Councillor David McLean, explained that the licence was permitted subject conditions. He said, all noise levels shall not exceed 55 decibels during the 15 minutes at monitoring stations agreed in writing. These will be agreed in no more than 28 days before the event. A noise consultant will be appointed to make sure the noise levels are complied with. The Foodies Festival this year is currently proposed for the 15th to the 17th of July.
New homes backed by Winchester. New homes backed by Winchester MP. New affordable homes that have been built in Winchester have been backed by the city's MP Steve Brine, who showed his support on a visit last week. Mr. Brine visited the Knights Quarter development in Rumsey Road, which has seen 244 homes built on the site of the former Hampshire Police headquarters, 97 of which are affordable homes. He met with Mark Washer, from Housing Association Sovereign, and Harry Lewis from Barclay, the two firms behind the development. Mr. Brine said, "We've all glimpsed this large development taking shape behind the hoardings on Rumsey Road, so it was good to take a proper look at some of the finished properties and hear what comes next. Affordable is always such a subjective term when it comes to homes in Winchester, so I was interested to hear about the housing mix on this site and the level of local interest already being shown. The average house price in Winchester is £447,808, £213,000 above the national average of £264,000. Local prices also increased 11% in the last year, further pushing up demand for affordable homes. Sovereign is offering shared ownership on 1 and 2 bed homes on the site, with prices starting from £108,000. Mr. Washer said, "Winchester is a great location for our homes, building affordable housing where it's needed most. We're proud to be able to build the right homes in the right places, and I'm looking forward to seeing residents enjoying their new homes soon. Residents will be moving into their new homes at Knight's Quarter around spring 2022. Hampshire Constabulary declared the 1960s base unfit for purpose and moved officers to Mottisfont Court in Hampshire Fire and Rescue Services headquarters in Eastleigh in 2016. The base was demolished to make way for the new estate between Rumsey Road and West End Terrace. The 60 modern, comfortable and spacious shared ownership 1-bed and 2-bed apartments are available to reserve now through Sovereign for shared ownership and can be bought with deposits from 5% of the shared value."
Zoo taking precautions after nearby bird flu outbreak. Marwell Zoo has introduced precautionary measures to protect itself from bird flu after a case was confirmed nearby. Although the zoo is currently free of avian influenza, it has taken strict measures after a farm in Bishop's Waltham had to cull its birds. The samples taken by DEFRA officers from the poultry farm contained a highly contagious virus, H5N1. The officers confirmed that all birds at the farm would be humanely culled. The zoo has temporarily closed its Energy for Life, Tropical House and Walk-Through aviaries to the public. Marwell is home to critically endangered species, such as blue crowd laughing thrushes and the swift parrots, in addition to birds such as Humboldt penguins and flamingos. The avian flu restrictions come as the latest setback for the conservation charity, which was forced to close for a total of 9 months during the coronavirus pandemic. Avian flu is a disease that spreads amongst birds, and this winter season has seen the Animal and Plant Health Agency diagnose more cases than in any previous UK outbreak. Marwell's Veterinary Services Manager, Dr. Sarah Jane Smith, said, "You will notice that some areas of the zoo are temporarily closed to reduce the risk associated with contact between people and our birds. Additional hand sanitizers, foot mats and foot dips have been put in place at all entrance points to the zoo. If you see one of these on your journey through the zoo, please use it. If you keep captive birds at home, who are usually outdoors, please postpone your visit to us." Marwell Wildlife is a global conservation charity which relies solely on income from the zoo and the generation of, the generosity of its supporters. A statement from the UK Health and Safety Agency said, "Bird to human transmission of avian flu is very rare and has only occurred in a small number of times in the UK previously. The person in question acquired the infection from very close, regular contact with a large number of infected birds, which they kept in and around their home over a prolonged period of time. All contacts of the individual, including those who visited the premises, have been traced, and there is no evidence of onward spread of the infection to anyone else. The individual is currently well and self-isolating. DEFRA were contacted to comment on any updates to the situation at the farm in Bishop's Waltham.
Tom pedals through city. Diver Tom Daly passed through Winchester on Tuesday during his ride for comic relief. Tom took on a four-day endurance challenge, rowing, swimming, cycling and running from Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park in Stratford, East London, to his hometown in Plymouth, where he is raising money for life-changing projects supported by Comic Relief. On Tuesday, Tom started with a swim at the Redgrave Pinsent Rowing Lake near Reading, then continued by bicycle through Berkshire and into Hampshire. He passed through Overton, then on to Mitchell Dover, Stoke Charity, Kingsworthy, and into the city via Hyde Street, passing King Alfred's statue. The Olympic gold medalist took time to wave, acknowledge and say hello to his supporters cheering him on, although spectators in the city were few and far between in the chilly wet weather. From Southampton, Tom continued his cycle westwards on Wednesday, ready for his last day, where he will be taking a 30-mile run from Bovey Castle to Plymouth.
Cathedral glass engraver made master. A well-respected glass engraver was recently installed as Master of the Art Workers Guild. Tracy Shepherd has had engraved glass panels in Winchester Cathedral and St Lawrence Church, as well as the Hyde Abbey panel at the entrance to Hyde Abbey Garden. Tracy will be responsible for choosing and inviting speakers for the year, 17 evenings in total, as well as her own night, Master's Night. Tracy said, "I will have to chair meetings and represent the Guild at various events. It is the job of the past Masters to choose the next in line, and it is a huge honour to be asked. I'm extremely proud and humbled by the opportunity to serve the Guild in this capacity." Also, on February the 2nd, Tracy won Maker of the Year at the Heritage Craft Awards. The reception, hosted by the Right Honourable the Baroness Garden of Frognall PC and the Right Honourable the Lord Cormac, Vice Presidents of Heritage Crafts, was held at the House of Lords. The award was sponsored by the Marsh Charitable Trust and was presented by Nick Carter from the Trust. The Guild, which is housed in a Bloomsbury building, described by Tracy as rather splendid, was founded in 1884 by young architects and designers who wanted to create a meeting place for the fine arts and the applied arts on an equal footing. Many of the figures of the arts and crafts movement were active in the first 50 years. The Guild has represented traditional skills when they might have disappeared, but it has maintained a dialogue with modern design.
Cameras to tackle drivers who flout bus gate rules. Motorists could soon be hit with £60 fines for driving in a Winchester bus lane, as the council cracks down on the behaviour with a new camera. Hampshire County Council is considering introducing the enforcement camera to help snare drivers who are failing to heed current road markings. The authority is seeking approval to introduce the licence plate recognition technology, which could be fixed or mobile, as part of a move for greater powers made available by central government, which would allow it to fine motorists who ignore the bus gate in Station Hill. The road is one of 10 identified across the county, in areas including Eastleigh, Fareham and the New Forest, which have been selected due to their high number of recorded collisions that have resulted in an injury, historic reports of poor compliance to rules, and the potential for traffic congestion and delays. If successful, the County Council will have the means to punish motorists who continue to break restrictions. Councillor Rob Humby, Deputy Leader and Executive Lead Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "The locations identified are those where there is evidence the restrictions, such as banned turns, ignoring yellow box markings at junctions, and parking on school keep clear markings, are frequently being ignored. Central government is making it possible for highways authorities to take on the responsibility for certain types of enforcement, with the police continuing enforcement of others. Having the powers to enforce moving traffic restrictions will give us the ability to improve highway safety and help to reduce congestion on Hampshire's roads. Over time, we should see better compliance with the restrictions, with fewer and fewer contraventions as a result. It is expected that the costs of setting up and running enforcement arrangements will be offset by the revenue raised, while better compliance will reduce the requirements for further spending on overall traffic management."
Romance blossoms for falcons. It seems love wasn't only in the air for humans over the Valentine's weekend, but for peregrines too, as Winnie the falcon found herself a new mate. Winchester's resident female peregrine, who has had at least 25 chicks with her late mate Chester, returned to the ledge of the cathedral at the start of February. However, for the first time in years, Winnie was flying solo after her mate Chester died in May 2021. But in a befitting Valentine's twist, Winnie has found a new mate who has since been named William by the Winchester Cathedral team. After a frustrating start to the mating season for Winnie, romance and possibly peregrine chicks are back on the cards. That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas, and to the various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Walker.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. And do keep safe in this rather tempestuous weather. Hopefully it will be over by the time you receive this recording from us. Anyway, please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.